The baby boomers led waves of dramatic culture changes. Their voices raise awareness of consumerism, retirement programs, higher education, healthcare, and civil rights transformations. Now, the baby boomers have reached an age where it is our turn to give back to them for their voices, their struggles, and their footprint on the society we benefit from today. Boomer Living Podcast is dedicated to the support and the enhancement of senior living and the baby boomers' needs and demands. We welcome conversations between caregivers, providers, gerontologists, geriatricians, neurologists, technologists, developers, and operators with one objective: to serve our baby boomers. By bringing together these experts and the baby boomers' families, we can share our knowledge that will educate and inspire others on how to care for the baby boomers. We're a social platform that focuses on the respect and care of this aging population that gave their youth and their wisdom to the society we benefit from today. I'd like to welcome James Salinger to Boomer Living Podcast. Thank you so much, James, for being here with us today.
I, too, am looking forward to it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Great. So could we start by having you share some background information, where you're from, where does your expertise lie, and how did you get interested in this field?
So I am a humble Boston-bred person. I've been in commercial real estate and commercial real estate finance in particular for a number of decades. My initial formal education was in city planning, and I was a city planner in the Middle East for a number of years, and realized that, at least from my perspective, what was most important was the financial side of the business. So I went and got my MBA and have been in commercial and on the financing side of commercial real estate ever since. But financing all property types around the country in all markets, both large and small, and for owners and institutional investors.
Thank you. Now, with regard to senior living, does that phrase have a meaning to you? And what is that?
I've been involved in senior living from the development side, as well as from the financing side, with a focus on really the supply side of the business, meaning acquiring and developing properties and financing that development. I also have clients who have existing properties that they developed here in the New York area and helping them finance or refinance, in one instance, on many occasions, their properties, as well as the renovation and expansion of their property.
Now, is this mostly, did you say New York or the properties and where you're located?
So I'm located in the New York tri-state area. I live in Connecticut, but these properties that I've been involved with are all over the country, but most specifically in the tri-state area, in particular Connecticut, where I've worked with a group optioning real estate land, and in New York City.
How do you think COVID will change the trajectory of senior living industry?
So that's a really good question. I think that COVID is just accelerating a number of trends that were in place prior to COVID, but it's accelerating these issues and concerns in a real-time basis. I have sort of two passions. One is about affordability, and the other is about sustainable development. And so in both of those, I think there's been a real sea change. I have clients who have existing and operating properties that have forever, because they're in infill neighborhoods and because they're really good operators, have always operated at a strong occupancy. And the occupancy has forced them to be creative and really forward-looking in how they market to future tenancy, as well as what amenities and outreach they're doing to sustain their occupancy. Unfortunately, they've had some difficulties and have had to go through COVID, even though they were early in the game in locking down their facility to outside visitors, in being very specific about how their vendors approach their business, as well as focus on the health and welfare of their residents. But even with those instances, their population has been impacted in a negative way.
Yeah, I think one word comes to my mind, in the midst of COVID and how folks in the senior living industry is riding it out is resilience. You have to be, because obviously the aging population, there's going to be a lot more. There's 10,000 folks turning 65 plus every day. And having gone through this pandemic, I think it has prepared us for the long run. So the word resilient comes to mind when I think of the folks, what we've been trying to do in the last 9 months.
I have a mother who's 96 and assisted living in Sarasota, Florida. Mm. And the governor has been loosening the regulations regarding testing in her facility, and it raises great concerns.
Loosening
the testing requirements for workers and any of the medical practitioners who come into the facility.
Oh, wow. That's concerning. Like when you say loosening, so they're requiring less testing, infrequent, and what kind of results have you seen since the loosening?
Obviously, the experience with COVID is new for everybody around the world. And everybody's struggling to use best practices. Mm-hmm. And so when COVID hit, a number of the workers, the employees who work in the facility came down with COVID. So they implemented a very rigorous testing protocol every other week for all workers who would come into the facility. Mm-hmm. And recently the governor has loosened the regulations in the state of Florida. And when the governor loosened the regulations, they were going to end all the testing of their employees, which obviously is a concern. And my mother and other residents raise concerns, and hopefully they're addressing that.
Yeah. Now, with regard to funding, what issues has it created since the pandemic in terms of funding new and existing facilities?
I'm involved in both fronts. First, about existing facilities. There is a scrutiny as to best practices in the era of COVID, the protections for the residents, and really lenders are less focused on the medical aspects than maintaining census and occupancy, and then therefore the projected cash flow. So they want to know that the operator has plans in place, is doing what they have to do, and then looking through the exposure or experience over the past 6 months to see how have operations been impacted. And if they've been impacted, what are they doing on a going forward basis? So that's really no different than any other real estate transactions, but it's just making sure with a focus on cash flow and the underwriting of the loan. Now lenders are able to make adjustments to accommodate releasing or downtime. But so then what they try to focus on, at least in a new refinance of an existing facility, is are there proper reserves in place? Mm-hmm. And most lenders, including both Fannie and Freddie, have been requiring up to 12 months of principal and interest, taxes and insurance reserves, which makes it difficult for the operator, because those aren't monies they can use to either pay off an existing loan or implement a capital improvement procedure.
That's true. I think right now, operation is everything, right? And if you're getting a new loan, that part of the business will be highly looked at in the operators handling the day-to-day of their other operation communities. And of course, if there are any labor issues in that local area, if we're looking at a new development.
So new development has a real focus on how deep is the market, how sustainable is market demand, where will rent levels be? Occupancy on a going forward basis has been impacted downward since COVID started, I think fairly nationally as well as locally. And then just making sure that the residents have the means. The good news is, one, because a lot of my work is in the Northeast, these are typically infill sites. And so there's a lot of local demand generated with seniors aging in place. And we can talk about that if you want to. But in addition, the local residential housing market has been super strong. So seniors who are transitioning from living on their own to a facility have the benefit of having a lot of demand for their homes and then prices at a very strong level.
Wow, that's good. Because one of the concerns as you are uprooting your home after 50 plus years or so and moving to a new home is what are you going to do with that home? So it's good to know that there is a demand and that you don't have any issues in selling it. And that's local to your area right now.
Single-family resi markets have been pretty strong throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And that is one for a couple of reasons. Interest rates are very low, so buyers have the ability to buy more home. But there's also been a movement from the cities to the suburbs. So again, maybe a model that in the past decade hasn't been that exciting for millennials or generation Gen Zers suddenly has more appeal. Some of that's prompted by COVID to just get out of the cities.
So I know that you are involved with funding, ground up and land development for senior housing properties. So what gets you excited about developing a new property from ground up?
My background on the ground up side has been with both a development team, a bunch of investors, where ultimately we're initially going to develop ground up and do long-term leases with not-for-profit operators. And at the end of the day, the tax-exempt benefits of the not-for-profit to own the property themselves and develop on their own was more appealing. So we ultimately moved to a model where we would option land, take it through the approval process, and then flip it.
Mm.
I also have a client who also got a piece of land under option, or really now a second parcel, where he's going to do a ground lease with some national or regional operators. Mm-hmm. Working with sort of the financing structures and ways to facilitate the transaction to make it more appealing, as well as to really get it done in a sort of an uncertain times, is very exciting to me. But I also am excited by the opportunities of looking at new models for senior housing and how to make them affordable as well as allow residents of a community to stay closer to their family and to essentially age in place.
I know you share with me you have a major interest in green housing. So can you give me a brief explanation of what that is? And how did you get interested in green housing? And how do you think that may be in parallel to affordable housing?
Sure. Part of my interest in green housing, and when I talk about green housing, I'm talking about using a term that you had already used, which is resilient and sustainable, is to create a physical environment that is, one, energy efficient, but two, is healthy for the people who live and work there. And we've seen in the era of COVID, sustainability officers having a greater role in finding a low volatile organic compound, cleaning supplies, having better HVAC systems, figuring out a way to heat and cool properties that are, one, energy efficient, but two, have a better quality of living for them. Really what prompts me to focus on this is that I have two teenage daughters and I want to be able to leave a planet that's healthy for them and one that they can enjoy. And at least in the New York area, the built environment represents 75% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. So either greening existing properties or building new properties with an eye to making them more energy efficient and healthier are both drivers of reducing that carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm. For the listeners, and myself included, can you explain how can elements of green development be included in a facility design and operation?
For an existing facility, it is to improve the operations through insulation, through better windows, through more efficient HVAC system using things like cogeneration, where you're generating both heat, electric, and cooling. But for ground up, It's just using best practices in the New York area. The state government implemented some laws approximately a year ago that are focused on changing the building codes to require more energy efficient buildings. And part of, so that's the stick, and part of the carrot part of it is to be more creative in the financing approaches, including what's called PACE funding, which is using the taxing authorities to finance some of the improvements for existing properties to just make them more energy efficient. But also in an era of climate change, we saw, at least in the reaction to Hurricane Sandy in the New York area, where seniors have to shelter in place in some areas where they were impacted by the storms, but they couldn't relocate these seniors. And I think the same issues are happening in the West with fires, in the South with wind and hurricanes and flooding, to take into account what the impact of climate change will be when designing a building and making sure that they're safe. And in fact, to not have to upend the residents if there are some extreme weather events. That's whether having redundant energy sources, more resilient energy sources, if the power grid in a region is out, and helping them to bounce back quicker.
Now, what you're describing, are these more applicable to something, let's say 16 to 20 beds, or is it applicable to 80, 90 assisted living units? Is there even a criteria?
I think it's applicable to everything. I am a adjunct professor at New York University in the graduate real estate program, and I talk to my students about looking at investment metrics beyond the typical 5 or 10 year investment horizon. And so sometimes energy improvements, like a new, more efficient HVAC system, has an easier to discern payback than maybe some other kind of improvements that may create a better quality of life, but may not have the immediate payback. And so therefore, that's where some government funding programs can help underwrite, either through tax credits or grants, underwrite some of the energy improvements for owners of both small facilities, 20 isn't small, but on the smaller end, or large facilities, where they can creatively finance some of these needed improvements and really go beyond just sort of replacing an existing unit to something that is really more energy efficient and also has a better quality of heat and cooling.
You mentioned PACE. Now, I've never used PACE, but I've heard of it. Can you explain what that is? How do you qualify, interest rate, the terms? Quick highlight on that.
Sure. So PACE financing is a fairly new concept, and it is a lien on the property using the taxing authorities to service the loan, as opposed to a banker or a lender getting a first mortgage lien. So the debt comes before the first mortgage debt. And because of that, it requires on a county by county a process across the nation for counties to approve using that mechanism to service the loan. It also requires lenders to approve it, because even though it's going to fund building-wide improvements, it puts the lender, at least from their own perception, behind a larger amount of money. So in some ways, it's easier to use for a new refinance than an existing loan, because sometimes you have to get the existing lender to approve it, and that's not always easy. But it is specifically to improve properties in the South. It's some of those mandated improvements would be structural and wind-resistant improvements on the West Coast. Historically, I think in San Francisco, every small commercial building needs to improve its seismic and structural integrity. And so it's to finance that. In the Northeast, a lot of it is for solar heating or window improvements or a new HVAC system.
I see. Okay.
And it allows the borrower to finance some of those improvements that maybe are more difficult to fund.
I think it's a valuable alternative, other than HUD.
For larger facilities, HUD is obviously the go-to entity. Mm-hmm. And Fannie, Freddie, and HUD have remained active throughout COVID, when a lot of banks or non-bank lenders, non-traditional lenders have been holding back financing until they understood where the capital markets would end up at.
I know it firsthand. A few of my projects are on hold right now for the reasons that you described. Let me ask you, on a personal level, have you given any thought about your own aging and or your own senior living options once you get to the age?
I probably haven't given that much thought to it at the moment. I have two teenage daughters, so I'm focused on the present. Mm-hmm. Other than I have committed myself to a lifetime of sort of healthy living, healthy food, activity, sports, as well as mindfulness-oriented practice to help with my own longevity. And in fact, my general practitioner told me that meditation helps elongate certain parts of my DNA, which will help in the aging process. But I assume, because of the nature of your podcast, you're thinking more in terms of the structure. I've had a good role model in my mother, who really made her own decision ultimately when she decided to move. My siblings and I helped her find a facility. She was living in Sarasota. I'm in the Northeast in Connecticut, and most of my siblings are up here. But so she made her own decision in her own time. She had been living on her own. But having seen other friends or colleagues' living situations where their parents have been less willing to think it through, it makes me think that it's very important to make those kind of plans and to figure out where and at what time I would have to do that. Although it is, at least at the moment, feels that it's over the horizon, it probably, as a boomer, is probably less over the horizon than I would want to acknowledge.
Yeah. I'm with you right there. So it sounds great that your mom was open and also very decisive. And she seems like she made the decision. She knows what she wants to do. My own journey is the opposite of that. They didn't know what to do. And having so many people in the family, my family was just too many people, too many input, and not having that discussion earlier on when they were well and trying to bring that up when they're not well and having to make it timely. You just compounded with multiple layers of emotions and stress. And anyhow, and that is the reasoning behind that question, is to really bring light to folks. Hey, have you considered yourself or maybe your parents' health and living arrangements and obviously the costs associated with that? Because I think the sooner we know, plan, the better off that we'll be and not be under multiple crises at the time.
So you asked a question about COVID. Mm-hmm. And accelerating trends. My daughters don't live with me. Mm-hmm. And when COVID hit, I sent to them as well as to my executors and my family members who I've assigned like a living will as making them decision makers. Mm-hmm. I thought very hard and clear in the eventuality because I'm healthy, but in the era of COVID, if something were to happen, that the people who are responsible for that, as well as my kids, understood that they were provided for and that there are arrangements in place. So I'm really thankful many years ago that I put that in place. But I think that's also in addition to making financial arrangements for future and physical arrangements, having those kind of legal arrangements in place, I think also go to your question.
Very true. Very true. Now, what are your thoughts about aging in place and affordable housing? I know those two are very near and dear to your heart as well.
So the issue of affordability is really very complicated because development costs are fairly fixed. And at least where I live in the Northeast, it's hard to accommodate affordability just because break-even costs and finding the right kind of facility. I don't think I will age in place. I'm here because of, you know, family circumstances, but ultimately will probably at some point in my life down the road relocate to a place, a state that's cheaper to live in, mm-hmm. And probably would have more affordable living. But affordability is an issue for people at all levels on the income spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I, in fact, got this email today from the Harvard Joint Center of Housing Studies, and they were just talking about many senior communities are lacking the ability, choices of affordable living. Mm-hmm. And that's really unfortunate. And I think, without getting too political, as a society, I think it's really important to begin to think through new models of housing service deliveries, mm-hmm. as well as things that are affordable. And then just lastly on that point, and I can't point to specific models other than some developers who had contacted me, but intergenerational mm-hmm. communities, their vision was to have intergenerational communities where there would be a cross-pollinization, mm-hmm. so opportunities for services, for workers, for shopping, for intellectual stimulation or activities.
I think that's a great idea. I would love it. I would be more inclined to moving into a place intergenerational, like you describe. Like my parents and grandparents, they love it when they're surrounded by the grandkids and the great grandkids. So each generation provides something that's beautiful to each other. It's wonderful. It's for the socialization. But I also want to be around younger kids too. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. So do you have any other thoughts that you would like to share?
Well, I want to applaud you for your efforts on this important subject. I've been watching your podcast, and I think it's really interesting, the wide range of speakers that you're getting involved and really approaches, because I think this issue takes people from all aspects of this industry. I'm not an operations person, so I really applaud you and welcome the opportunity and to share this with any of your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for noticing. And it's an honor to have you on here and to shed some light to the listeners. And I really appreciate it. And I'm so glad that we connected too.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it too.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on Boomer Living Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, boomerliving.tv, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and other platforms. This way, you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in this show, we would really appreciate a rating in iTunes, or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us tremendously. Be sure to tune in weekly for our next episode. And remember, growing old is the purest and the most positive experience of human existence.